Thank you for joining us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. You are listening to Writing on the Air, 91.7 on the dial and streaming online at koop.org. This is Writing on the Air. I'm your host, Mindy Reed. Thanks for joining me. We cover a range of writing and reading topics from fiction, nonfiction, memoir, poetry, blogs, and even songwriting. This show is for aspiring writers, avid readers, and those just curious about words. Each week, we will hear from local writers about the process of writing, share some inspiration, and check out local meetups for writing and/or discussing books. The views expressed on Writing on the Air do not necessarily reflect the views of KOOP Radio, its staff, management, or the board of directors. Welcome to the November 18th broadcast of Writing on the Air. Today's guest is Jennifer Marchman. Even before the release of the Mender trilogy, Jennifer was writing a variety of formats, both as a career and for pleasure. Her previous endeavors have included ghostwriter, memoirist, you write memoirs, editor, curriculum writing, educational blogger, and grant writer. She was a 2022 finalist in the Writers League of Texas Manuscript Contest, where she's also a member of the Writers League, as well as the Historical Novel Society and Time Travel Authors in the Twitterverse. I'll need to ask you more about that. She enjoys flamenco dancing, is the proud owner of a white belt in jiu-jitsu, and wishes to compete internationally in mounted archery.
Yeah.
Archery from a horse.
Yes.
Wow. She lives in Austin with her family. Welcome, Jennifer. And is there anything that I have left out?
I don't think so, but thanks for having me on your show today.
It's a pleasure. So your three books of the Mender trilogy include The Mender, The Captive, and The Guardian. What is the greatest challenge in keeping a series going?
Well, I wrote it all as one book originally, and it was just really too big to be published as one book. So that's, and happily, I saw that it really had three separate arcs and then one overarching arc.
Right.
You know, it was easy to split up into three books.
Yeah. And that kind of keeps people coming back to you. As well.
Yeah, so, and I've had a lot of people ask, you know, well, what happened to this character? What happened to that character? Yeah. So I've got several ideas that I can do for spinoffs.
Excellent, yeah. So your books have something for everyone. So how would you classify your genre and tell us a little bit about how you got into that genre?
People have told me it's considered speculative fiction. I'd say it's like 80% historical fiction with a time travel twist. Reviewers have compared it to The Outlander or The Man in the High Castle.
Oh, yeah.
And I love historical fiction.
Me too.
The more historically accurate, the better.
Yeah.
And I think time travel allows you to play with the differences between, you know, contemporary times versus, you know, the time that you're exploring.
Yeah, and I think people are more open to that concept. How do you start with your research, or do you start with outlining the novel?
I knew where my book was headed. My daughter and I, at the time I was homeschooling her, and it was seventh grade, so it was Texas history time.
Ah.
So we went down to Goliad to see the Presidio,
yeah.
and that's where I learned about the Angel of Goliad.
Right.
And it was right after that that I was like, okay, my kids are all older. I'm ready to write a book. I'd always wanted to write a book. And so I knew I wanted my book to end at the Goliad Massacre and have the Angel of Goliad in there somewhere.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of, you know, just kind of journaling, and then I just started writing. And as I had questions, then I started doing the research.
Right. I've always been fascinated why Goliad doesn't seem to have the prominence that the Alamo does.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems as much or even maybe more significant.
I didn't even know about it
right.
before I was teaching it to my daughter.
And you're from Texas
yeah.
originally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a Connecticut Yankee, so, but I was working with somebody from UT Press, and that's when I learned about it. And I was like, why isn't this being written about more or being, you know, shared more? The way the Alamo is. So,
and I think the Angel of Goliad was a really inspiring person. I wish we knew more about her.
Yeah. Well, which is a nice thing in working a novel is that, as you said, you can use the historical accuracy around the events, but you can kind of use your imagination to expand her the way you want her to be.
Yeah.
So that's a nice thing that authors have.
Well, and since my book is really in a multiverse, and right. and the timeline that they're on is very similar to ours, but I do have points where it diverges, and I make a point of pointing that out of just how different things could have turned out differently if
right.
different people lived or different people died.
Right. Yeah, it's like that. Stephen King book, November 1963. Uh-huh. I don't know if you're familiar.
I've read that one.
Yeah, so we're what would have happened, what would have turned out differently if Kennedy was not assassinated? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, the world would have been so much better, and you learn, you know.
It's not necessarily the case.
It's the butterfly effect, yeah. I think they call that, right?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because some of the men that the Angel of Goliad saved during the massacre went on to be officers in the Confederate Army. So it's just interesting to think about where things go.
Yeah, and it really is. And you think you know how things would turn this way or that, and you really don't. Do you find that readers are more receptive to a crossover genre? How would you convince a historical fiction reader to kind of accept this element of your writing of time travel and of
fantasy. I think Outlander really broke the ice on that.
Yes.
So and my ads actually do the best when I have a review that says it's similar to Outlander.
Oh yeah, that's the best compliment you can get, right? And so I don't think she's doing any more Outlander books.
I think I think she's had one in the last year or two.
And I believe the streaming series is finishing up, and so people are—they're looking for other ways and to kind of stay with that genre. So your timing.
Yeah. I should say mine's a little darker than hers. So just a warning.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. I mean, it was a really brutal time.
Yes.
And you know, anything that has massacre in its name is going to be dark. It's going to be stunning. And so my other question for you is, how important is it to have diverse characters represented in your writing?
For me, it was really important. My male main character is a former Comanche captive who's been forced back to Anglo society. And so I take a look at Anglo society. I take a look at, in the second book, they go and live in the Comanche village. And then the Goliad massacre, I look at, you know, Mexican culture at the time and how they're all different and similar. And I was really careful that my main characters are both Anglo, because I can't really write authentically from the Comanche perspective or the Mexican perspective. But I did work with the Comanche Museum, and I had a sensitivity reader who was a tribal member.
Oh, that's great. I've heard of beta readers, but this is the first time I've heard of sensitivity
well,
readers.
Well, she was, I mean, you could call her a beta reader, too. She was actually my very first reader. And she read it first, and then I went through 31 total beta readers, and then she read it at the end.
After you made revisions, basically.
And it was after her reading that I went to the Comanche Museum, and I had a lot of questions to make sure I was in line. As an Anglo, I feel like I need to be in line with the museum.
Right.
There were things that she disagreed with the museum on, and I made sure that, the way I resolved that was I had my female Comanche characters have that perspective and say some of the things that they say in the dialogue are things that she said to me. And then the male Comanche characters are the museum's perspective. Because I feel like, you know, humans are very diverse even with their own culture.
Absolutely. That's absolutely the case. And I mean, I'm sure with your experience in helping people with their memoirs, I often tell people that a memoir isn't a biography because, you know, my sister and I could have experienced the same situation. I'm going to see it one way. She's going to see it another. Mm-hmm. And that's what memoir allows us to do, is share it the way, through our lens.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what you've done here.
Yeah. And with a memoir, you really have to step back, and it's not about you. It's about them. And
yeah.
And you're just kind of the vessel they're speaking through.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I actually like ghostwriting. I don't know if you prefer writing fiction or writing.
I prefer writing fiction. Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. So you consider yourself an indie published author.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the pros and cons of independent publishing?
I think it is really, really, really hard to be traditionally published anymore. And I really like the full control over the creative process of being an independent published author. At least I've heard most authors will, you know, send out maybe 80 queries before they get an agent. And I sent out about 20 before I was like, I just don't feel good about this. This isn't what I want to do. And I felt like we have the tools now, software, like grammar software, you know, I can get an editor. There are amazing cover artists that I can hire. And I was able to do every piece. My cover looks exactly the way I wanted it to look.
Right. And I think what a lot of people don't realize, now, and this has been going on for almost 30 years, 25, 30 years, is that the traditional publishers are still expecting the authors that they bring on, unless they're legacy authors, to have it professionally edited, to do their own marketing, to do all the things that an indie author is doing anyway.
And then they're taking a cut.
And then they're taking most of it because you're only making a buck or two on royalties.
Yeah.
So
the other problem is they want you to have a following already.
Exactly.
So they're hiring. It's mostly like celebrities who are publishing, or you know.
It's so interesting because when I was going to Book Expo years ago, I remember that. They called it vanity press in those days. It was very looked down upon. They didn't want authors to be known. And now it's 180, right? It's like if you don't have an already built-in following, so you almost have to be putting material out there so that you can, you know, get that following or build that.
And it's hard. It becomes a chicken and egg problem. How do you get a following without being published first?
Exactly. Yeah. So if you are just joining us, this is Writing on the Air on KOOP 91.7 FM, KOOP.org. Our guest is author and journalist Jennifer Marchman. We'll share some announcements and then continue our conversation.
Snap, Crackle, and Pop. Co-op Radio and the Carpenter Hotel present Vinyl Nights with your favorite co-op DJs every month at the Carpenter Hotel Coffee Bar. Bring your own vinyl to spin or enjoy the playlist curated by the co-op DJs in residence that night. Happening every second Wednesday of the month from 6 to 8 p.m. More information at coop.org or on our socials at Co-op Radio.
Tune into Co-op every Monday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. for Roses and Thorns with me, Miss Buttercup. I explore the exhilarating and whacked emotion of love by bringing you songs of adoration and desire alongside songs of heartbreak and loneliness. We're celebrating the love and meeting you where you are in the heartbreak.
If you are just joining us, this is Writing on the Air on KOOP 91.7 FM, KOOP.org. Our guest is author Jennifer Marchman. She's an author who writes in many different ways, but is not a journalist. we've been talking about her trilogy, the Mender trilogy, and you've got three books out now that are in the trilogy.
Correct.
That's correct. And over what time frame did it take you to
to write it.
Yeah.
It took me 6 weeks to write the whole thing. I entered a flow state of some sort, and it was not actually healthy. I kind of stopped eating and stopped sleeping. My husband would be like, come to bed. And then I would just continue thinking about it. And then I would write whatever I thought about overnight. And it just, and then I was researching as I was doing it. Yeah. But it took me about 18 months to revise it.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because for many writers, it's not about the original.
Yeah.
It's about the revisions and the rewrites. And so, but that you kind of let it all pour out of you is really wonderful, and that I'm guessing you didn't self-edit while you were in that process.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I would reread where I'd been the day before when I stopped.
Right.
And I'd make some changes as I went, but then it would just keep going.
I think that's really important. I often tell emerging writers that, just throw it all out there, turn off that internal editor, turn off the spell check and the grammar check, and, because you always want to be in a place, I think, where you don't have to go back and re-explain something to the reader, that the thought process of how this all came about is natural.
Yeah.
And then you can, you said, tighten it up and edit it. And then you said you originally wrote this as a single book instead of as three books?
Correct,
in a trilogy?
It was over 200,000 words when I was done, and I was like, okay, this is too big.
Yeah, that's pretty substantial.
Yeah.
So, but there were natural points where you could break out the Mender, the Captor, and the Guardian, which are the three books in the trilogy?
Yeah, basically the Mender takes place in San Felipe, which is Austin's original colony.
Right.
And then book two, they go to Comancheria and live with Jim's adoptive family. Mm-hmm. And then the third book, they end up at the Goliad Massacre.
Right. Which, if you don't, folks don't know about the Goliad Massacre, because they don't teach it.
They really don't.
Look it up. So what are you working on now? Do you plan on adding to the Mender series, or should we expect something new?
Nothing soon. I feel like the creative well is dry at the moment.
Yeah, sounds like you really...
But my daughter's a senior this year. Wow. She's my last one to leave the house. So I'm really focused on enjoying her being at home, because I'll have plenty of time to not eat or sleep after she's gone. And but I do have some spin off, like, people have wondered what happened to other characters, what their origin stories are. And
so the origin story is another great thing that's come into the vernacular, where we can go back and, not everything happens necessarily in chronological order as we introduce the characters to folks. So
I do have a short story that I wrote after the book that was included in a time travel collection, and it's a prequel to my trilogy.
Good. Do you belong to writing groups or organizations that help you foster your writing, and even maybe just having to do your own publicity and other work?
Yeah, I'm most active in the Austin Indie Authors Group. Uh-huh. I co-host it with my buddy Kyle, and we mostly focus on the business side of writing, because I think that's where most authors really struggle. It's really, the fun part is writing the book.
The fun part is writing the book, and I think for a lot of people who are very creative, it's difficult to put on that entrepreneurial hat and what you need to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah. So we meet once a month in person at the Black Star Co-op, and we just share what's working, what's not working. Mm-hmm. And we've got, some veteran authors who've been writing for 15 years who are able to, tell us, what works and what doesn't, help us avoid pitfalls.
Yeah. And promotion is just part of it. And then you were talking about participating in some local book clubs as well.
A book club invited me to come speak after they read the book one, and that was the most fun I've had in the marketing part, I guess.
Yeah,
because they had read the book, they had all sorts of questions. Because I have a lot of philosophy and metaphysics in my book, so lots of meaty stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
So I'd love to do another book club.
Did they surprise you with some of their questions? Like, made me notice something that you hadn't.
I'm not sure about surprise, but I was really happy when they did make connections I wanted them to make.
Excellent.
Or, yeah.
That's definitely. Good news for a writer. So you kind of shared with us your writing process for this. So did you do the whole trilogy that way?
Yes. Yeah, it was all one book.
And so normally I ask our guests to give advice for aspiring authors, but I wouldn't guess that you would say don't eat, sleep.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, don't do what I did. I've got to figure out how to write healthily, really, before I try it again.
Yeah.
But I do think journaling is where I would say to start.
And, yeah.
And just free writing. I did a lot of that with my kids during homeschooling. I'd set a timer and we would just write stream of consciousness for 10 minutes. And it just helps get the editor out of your head. And I was an English major in college and I did creative writing. And I think it took me, 25 years to break out of some of that, the editor that they kind of put in your head.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is how we're taught in school is say what you're going to say it, and then say what you said and make sure that your grammar is perfect. And so it's all about, the mechanics of writing instead of the creative process of writing.
It's really the cart before the horse.
Yeah, it really is. And I find when I'm editing, I'd much rather be assisting someone who has really wonderful ideas and character development and plot, but terrible grammar and sentence structure, because that can be fixed, that can be addressed. But I've also known people who, every sentence is structured correctly and there's not a single comma out of place, but it's just not an interesting story to read. So, So the creativity is really important.
There was one book that I found really helpful. It was called The Story Grid by Coyne was his last name.
Mm-hmm. The Story Grid.
I can't remember his first name, but it was really helpful.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Stephen King's book on writing and Natalie Goldberg's Writing Down the Bones.
Yeah.
We have a online writing group that meets on Friday afternoons, and the first thing we do for our prompts is we go to Natalie Goldberg, and it's amazing how she still provides that.
Yeah.
So that's really good advice. So do you have time to read? And if so, what are you reading now?
Oh, I do. I didn't bring something, but I brought the books for you. I could read from that.
Oh, no. I was wanting to know what books you're reading
now
for pleasure.
What am I reading now? I'm reading Braiding Sweetgrass, which is nonfiction. I'm actually kind of on a nonfiction kick at the moment.
Really?
Yeah. I think since revising my books, it's been hard to turn my own editor off as I'm reading someone else's fiction. So it's been much more enjoyable. It's more enjoyable for me to read nonfiction at the moment.
Yeah. Well, and I like to go back and forth. And I think also because you're writing historical fiction and it is based in fact that you really depend upon the nonfiction to inform you as any good historical writer would do.
Yeah. I've always read a lot of nonfiction.
Yeah. But the important thing is that you're reading. So I come up with a new question I've been asking folks who come on the air now, and that is, Oxford, yes or no?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I am team Oxford, comma.
I'm team Oxford, comma as well. Although, who knows, and I think... we were talking before the show, the impact that AI might be having on us. And even I find when I'm doing a search for something, you know, the first thing that pops up is an AI article, and that's not what I want.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to find something out about a poet or, you know, a certain, I don't want, you know, something that's just been homogenized.
Yeah, and distilled down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and our guest last week was talking about an upcoming guest who I've been talking to, Paige Ewing. She was telling me that she's with a hybrid publisher, and she said the third book in her trilogy took longer because the publisher had to put it through AI to determine and to make sure that nothing that was written was done in an AI way or taken from.
Yeah.
So I think as writers, we all just really need to be aware of what this new technology means. And
it really kind of broke my heart when it came out right after I had finished.
Oh, that's
my
good.
but I don't like where it's headed.
Yeah, well, I know that you said you used a graphic designer for your cover designs, which are great. And I like working closely with designers as well. But I think a lot of people are turning to AI now for book cover design or, you know.
I mean, it's very tempting. It was it was expensive for me to get my book covers. But I do think I would still pay a book cover artist, a person to do it.
Yeah, and even people that read ebooks, when you're searching whatever site you're getting your ebook from, the cover still matters.
Yeah.
You know, having that visual still makes a big difference.
Yeah, so. It really is probably the most important element.
Yeah. Which we've been telling folks for years.
Yeah.
You tell a book by its cover. So is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about you or the Mender Trilogy or the writing experience?
Ooh, that's a hard question. I did do mounted archery for about 3 years.
Wow, that's so exciting. Yeah, so talk about Outlander. You lived it.
Yeah, so the scenes where they're, you know, shooting and riding are, you know, from my own experience.
I think that's
that's probably, I'm drawn to Comanche culture, Mongol culture. I mean,
so there's something. Depending on what your belief system is.
Well, when I went to the Comanche Museum, the cultural specialist, his father had been a bow maker, and he had grown it, like, he was trying to bring back archery in his community. And so I took my bow up there. We talked about the Comanche style versus the styles I had learned. And it was just kind of a fun.
To have that connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, now we need to talk about my book.
I know. Like, we all go down bunny holes, that's for sure. Well, I want to thank you, Jennifer, for coming in and talking with us about your trilogy, the Mender Trilogy, and the process that it took for you to create this. And so I hope you've had a good time.
It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. And as always, I want to thank our engineer, DJ Harris, for making this show possible. Couldn't do this without him. He always makes me look good. And I encourage you all to stay tuned for the Art Sparks Radio Hour with Celia Hughes.